Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Football Social Daily. Your daily Premier League podcast.
They've been linked with some big names this transfer window. Jesse Lingard, Aaron Ramsey, even Kylian Mbappe at one stage. But it's Burnley striker Chris Wood, of all people, who looks set to become Newcastle United's newest recruit. £20 million should do it, a price that some have laughed at. But in their time of need and with the resources they have, do Newcastle United even care? The Burnley big man has dominated the back pages this morning as his move to St James's Park is finalised. Where does this leave current employers the Clarets, though, in their quest to beat the drop, with their main striker heading to a relegation rival? We'll attempt to answer those questions on today's show, as well as reflecting on a super night for Southampton as they battered Brentford in the Premier League last night in front of their new owner. And there's more top-flight football to feast upon this evening as Champions League-chasing West Ham host Championship-headed Norwich City. My name's Niall, and this is Football Social Daily, the daily Premier League podcast from Sports Social. This is the place to get your footy fix 7 days a week, so hit subscribe, and that way you won't miss an episode again, including The Dugout, our new show for the season featuring former Premier League professionals. And joining me this week, we'll have ex-Arsenal striker and Man City hero Paul Dickov, and we'll also be joined by current Middlesbrough defender and one-time Leicester and Leeds man Sol Bamba. So really looking forward to that. That'll be out Friday, but if you hit subscribe, you'll receive a notification when that one is available to download. But for today, I'm going to bring you crashing down to earth here. We've got Leeds fan Ian Brannan and Man City supporter Matt Pidd. Morning to you, gents.
Morning, Niall.
Good morning, yes. Nothing more sobering than a Leeds and a Manchester United fan to start your day.
Well, don't call him a Man United fan. That's a
Christ, that's even worse. Yeah. City.
Any memories of Sol Bamba at Leeds, Ian, seeing as I just mentioned him there?
Yeah. Oh, he's a Leeds legend, is Sol Bamba. Hugely respected as far as I'm aware. And he's had some health problems, hasn't he, recently? I think I'm right in saying. And a lot of love for Sol Bamba. He did a good job. Probably went under the radar by a lot of people because, you know, one of those players in the Championship that did a great job. Unfortunately, he wasn't part of the Leeds side that finally, you know, got to the Premier League. But he did a great job. He was Leeds captain for a long time. So yeah, a lot of people, a lot of respect for him. He's, you know, I think if ever he goes back to Elland Road for whatever reason, he'll get a warm welcome for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Obviously, he's a Middlesbrough player currently, and you're right. He did actually beat cancer earlier, last year actually, as it is now 2021. He beat cancer, which is brilliant. A real warrior of a man, absolutely loves defending, and I'm really excited to hear what he has to say. A Leeds legend is Sol Bamba, says Ian. What about Chris Wood? Not so much, I think.
Well, do you know what? I think it's a bit split. I think that, you know, looking online just to sort of see what the general, you know, Leeds United fans are always never a good barometer to go by, because, you know, even if they'd won the Champions League, winning the final against PSG 14-0, there'd still be somebody complaining about something. just how it goes. There are people who would take Chris Wood back immediately in Leeds' current situation of, you know, struggling up front a little bit with the injuries.
No players to your current situation.
Well, yeah, just any fit players would be welcomed in whatever condition they're in. but yeah, is he worth 25 million quid? No. He certainly isn't. Yes, Newcastle have been absolutely screwed, but hey, they've got stupid money and they're going to get screwed in every transfer deal they do, no matter what it is. And he was all right for Leeds, but if you're the richest club in the world, as they claim they are, is Chris Wood the signing you were hoping for? No, it is not. I don't know. He's too indifferent. He's not Lionel Messi, right? And I think this, looking online, there's some Newcastle fans really excited that this is the answer to their problems. They've got an out and out goal scorer, and they're going to be pumping them in. He's not. He's not going to do that. He is not a 20 goal a season striker. That is not Chris Wood. And he scored 3 goals this season. He hasn't scored since November, despite playing in all of the matches that Burnley have been involved in. He hasn't scored. He's on a really bad drought at the minute. Of course, Chris Wood is going to leap at the chance to be paid a fortune to play for Newcastle United. Of course he is. And I think many Leeds fans, whilst some would say, yeah, they'd have him back, there's quite a few saying, oh, what a surprise, Chris Wood going somewhere for money. so, you know, that's why he left Leeds. He left Leeds because Leeds couldn't fulfil his ambitions to achieve great things in the Premier League. So he joined Burnley.
Well, he joined Burnley for 15 million quid from Leeds. That was a few years ago. He was Burnley's record signing. And if you haven't been caught up with the news, this is what's happened. Newcastle United are closing in on signing Chris Wood, the Burnley striker. Believe it or not, Wood had a release clause of somewhere between 20 to 25 million pounds. Newcastle United have met that release clause, and a few at Burnley are a bit confused, a bit frustrated, a bit annoyed that one of their prized assets, so to speak, is going to go to a relegation rival. We'll talk about Burnley in a second. But as Ian just picked up on there, Matt, a few people are suggesting that Newcastle United have been ripped off. First of all, they're in a bit of a mess. They are in the relegation zone. And it's not quite like what happened to your club, Man City, when you got taken over, because you were a mid-table Premier League club when that investment came in. Newcastle were struggling at the bottom of the table, so it's almost a case of beggars can't be choosers. But they have chosen to sign Chris Wood, so is that a fair price for you, do you think, 20 to 25 million quid?
Well, it was like what Ian just mentioned there. They are going to be held to ransom now because of the amount of money that they've got. Clubs are going to get whatever they can out of them. And if Newcastle are in the position that they're in now, they are desperate. Let's be real with the situation. They are absolutely desperate, especially for goals. They've not scored enough this season. Callum Wilson needs help. 25 million for Chris Wood, definitely not for me in terms of price. But it reminds me of when City first got taken over. Every single player we went in for, clubs put on another 10 million on top just because they could, because they knew we had the money. I remember Joe signing for us. Anyone remember Joe? Anyone remember how many Premier League goals he scored for City? It reminds me of that sort of situation. He wasn't the best player, but you know what? City at that time, like you said, we was a mid-table club, but we had ambitions at the time to get into the top four, top six even. So we signed a player and it didn't work out. At the end of the day, Chris Wood is a Premier League striker. He's been in the Premier League for a number of seasons now. He's scored 50 goals in 155 Premier League appearances, which is an average of 0.32 goals per game. He's only got 3 this season in total, which isn't prolific by any means. But, you know, it's not bad, especially for a striker that's playing in a Burnley side that aren't really known for the, like, attacking style of play. Wood is one of those players that doesn't mind the physical side of the Premier League. He doesn't mind the physical side of the battle with centre-halves. And if Newcastle are going to survive this season, they're going to need that kind of battle. They're going to need that kind of player that's going to roll up his sleeve and go like, come on, boys, let's get in the trenches and let's fight for this. He might not be the best technically. He might not be the best all-round goal scorer. But at the end of the day, Newcastle do need goals at the moment. And if he can add to those you know, then Newcastle, they're going to try and make a fight of it at least.
Yeah, I think you're right. He's the sort of player that, as Ian says, isn't technically blessed and isn't someone who's going to ratchet 20 goals a season, but he'll run through a brick wall for you. And I think that's the sort of attitude that Newcastle need, don't they, when they're in the relegation zone.
Absolutely.
And I thought it was interesting you mentioning about Joe, and of course Robinho was that first big signing that you had at Man City. It's almost as if Newcastle can't go in and start buying the Mbappes of this world straight away, because it's just laughable. He's not going to join Newcastle United.
It's not FIFA. We're not playing FIFA. This is real life.
Precisely. And it took Man City, eight years to get into a position where they had to, you know, sign players of a certain quality quite astutely. Someone like David Silva, someone like Sergio Aguero, who were decent players, but they weren't world class. And they came into City and City made them world class. And then that, therefore, attracts better players when you start winning stuff. So it is a process. It's not going to happen overnight. But I suppose my question is, nowadays, with the fees that we see, Matt, is 25 million quid the going rate for a half-decent player? I mean, you think back to last season, was it Sheffield United paid 20 million for Rian Brewster, who was unproven, who was a kid, who had a bit of an arrogance about him, suggesting that he was going to be the next big thing. It just hasn't been the case. That's a lot of money to spend on a young player. And yet this is £25 million, which seems like a lot for Chris Wood because he plays for an unfashionable club. But as you've mentioned, he's got Premier League experience and he scored goals at a rate of 1 in 3.
Yeah, it's inflation has a lot to do with it as well. The prices of players now are absolutely ridiculous. You look 10 years ago and, you know, £25 million was like, you know, near enough like a British transfer record. I remember Andy Carroll, was it £35 million when he signed for Liverpool not too long ago, 10 years ago. And that was a British transfer record. Now you're looking at 100 million for a British transfer record with Jack Grealish. So it's just the way football has gone with the amount of money that's in the game at the moment with TV rights and streaming and stuff like that. That's just the way it is nowadays. 25 million sounds like a lot, but in the grand scheme of things nowadays, is it really a lot? For a striker of Chris Wood, maybe. But at the end of the day, this is what I just said about Newcastle. Newcastle now have probably the richest club in the world. They're 10 times richer than my club. You know, and my club are one of the richest around. So that says it all right there. They are going to get held to ransom with these kind of things now. Clubs are going to get every single penny they can out of Newcastle. And Newcastle at the moment are just going to have to grin and bear it, because like we were just saying then, it is a process. Newcastle aren't going to sign all these world-class strikers straight off the bat. They're going to have to build a team. They're going to have to survive in the Premier League this season, for one, if they're gonna build on it for next season. Because in the Championship, you know, who's going to join them in the Championship? Yeah, they might be able to offer decent wages, but no one's going to want to just take a step down just to get Newcastle back in the Premier League. Because, you know, we know football is a short career. Newcastle might not get out the Championship at the first time of asking just because of the money. Because we know the Championship is notoriously difficult to get out of. There's a lot of quality teams down there. So what Newcastle need to focus on first and foremost is finishing off the rest of the season out of the top three, out of the bottom three even. They need the goals, they need the fight, and Chris Wood can bring them both of those things, I feel.
What does this mean for Burnley though, Ian? Obviously, Chris Wood is someone that they anticipated staying until the end of the season. I don't think Sean Dyche allegedly was even aware that Wood had a release clause in his contract. I think the reason this move came about is because they share the same agent, as in Wood and Kieran Trippier, who's just signed for Newcastle, share the same agent. So I think that's where the move came about originally. This leaves Burnley in a real weakened position, albeit they've played two games fewer than most of their relegation rivals. They've only won a single game all season in the Premier League. They are struggling. Without Maxwell Cornet scoring goals, it seems like no one's scoring goals for them. And the one person that might have a chance of putting the ball in the back of the net has now gone off to a rival. So this is pretty bad news for Burnley all round, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a big problem that Burnley probably weren't banking on having, because with quite a hefty release clause for a player such as Chris Wood, they probably would have felt that he was safe from most clubs with any sense, thinking, well, you know, with the best will in the world, that's a lot to pay for Chris Wood, as we're saying. And in come Newcastle and sort of meet that. So yeah, it is a problem now that they're going to have to resolve. And maybe whilst Chris Wood hasn't been particularly prolific in putting the ball in the net, that's not to say that his contribution to the games hasn't you know, resulted in anything. I'm sure he's contributed in some assists and generally in the play. And, you know, as you say, he is a pain. He's, you know, that's probably what he
he's
is.
A handful.
You know, a thorn in the side, really. And it difficult for clubs to break down. And I'm sure that many clubs, when they're preparing to play against Burnley, sort of do figure out what they're going to do with Chris Wood to keep him quiet, because, you know, he is a bit of a goal poacher, and he can be on his day, you know, a bit of a problem, in a bit of a handful, you know, in the penalty area, especially with set pieces, corners, what have you, when the ball goes in, because he's a big lad, tall lad, can get his head on it, you know, so can be trouble. And certainly for the way Burnley play.
Yeah, Sean Dyche is going to have to earn his coin now, though, isn't he, Ian? Because, you know, he signed a new contract and everyone was saying that's great news. The new owners came into Burnley, put pen to paper on a new deal. He's the longest serving manager in the Premier League. And he's now lost one of his key players, his key striker. So, I mean, he's going to really have to earn his money to keep Burnley up, because it seems unlikely that they'll go into the window and buy someone.
Well, as we've mentioned just before about the going rate for a half-decent player. You know, that money that they've got for Chris Wood, they're going to, you know, same applies now to in terms of getting ripped off, because everybody knows that they've got 25 million quid to spend. So no matter how much you might value a player, even if that player is 10 million or 15 million, everybody knows Burnley have got 25 million quid in the bank now. So, and they've got more than that, because they haven't actually spent a great deal of their TV money over the years. So Burnley, actually, as it goes, are pretty loaded. So,
you know, Sean Dyche's method has been to just construct a squad from free agents or cheap Championship players, and it's worked so far, but, you know, that can only take you so far.
You have to ask the question, right? They have, and it is a fact that they have got money, you know, stashed away in case of a rainy day and all that, of Burnley. When is that rainy day? And is that now? Now that you've got no striker, you're in the relegation zone, surely the price of a decent striker, supposing they spend 25, 30 million themselves on whoever, don't know, that's got to be worth the investment at the risk of losing your 100 odd million a year for being in the Premier League. Discuss.
Yeah, and I think it's a really good point, and I'm keen to see what Burnley actually do in this transfer window. Their first piece of activity, albeit unwanted and inadvertent, is to allow Chris Wood to join relegation rival Newcastle United. His release clause has been met between £20 and £25 million. That's expected to be finalised over the next few hours. Even by the time you listen to this podcast, perhaps it might have already been confirmed. We brought you some news on yesterday's podcast that Aston Villa have been chasing Everton fullback Luca Dean. That's now allegedly been agreed in a deal worth a very similar fee, up to £25 million. There's been a fair few days worth of negotiations, and there will be a medical in Birmingham later for Luca Dean. Meanwhile, Anwar El Hazi could be going the other way to Everton for £15 million in a separate deal. So that's the latest when it comes to Villa and Everton. We're going to move on now and talk about Mo Salah, because even though we're in a transfer window, it doesn't really seem like Mo Salah could be playing anywhere other than Liverpool for the rest of his career. That's certainly what he said he wanted to do, Matt. Mo Salah has put his cards on the table and he says, I love playing at Liverpool. I'm playing my best football here. I'm one of the best players in the world when I've been here. I don't want to leave. I want to stay, but I want a new contract, because he's been on the same contract for the last few years. He's outperformed it, many people would argue, but Liverpool seem to be reluctant to give him what he wants. And again, the club are stalling on giving him this new deal, and allegedly he's not asking for a great deal more than what he's already got. But the argument, I suppose, is he's their best player, Matt. Why don't they just give him what he wants?
I really, really do not understand this whatsoever. When he first came into Liverpool in his first season, he scored over 40 goals in his first season in all competitions. He should have had a new contract there and then after that one season. His numbers are ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous when you look at him. I mean, he's even got over 20 goals this season already. And it's only just January. The numbers are an absolute joke. He's arguably at the moment the best in Europe in terms of the way he's playing, his goals, his all round play. His link up with the players that he's playing with. He's won the Champions League. He's won the Premier League with Liverpool. He's done a lot for them since he came in. I think he came in the 17-18 season. He came in then. He's been at the club now for like 4 years. So he deserves anything that he's asking for at the moment, he deserves. Because you look at Liverpool, they've, like I said, the trophies that they've won, they've got the money there. So I don't understand why they are stalling. Maybe they probably think he's a bit more loyal and he's not going to move on. But at the end of the day, you've got clubs like Real Madrid sniffing round for him. You know, who's not going to want to go and play for Real Madrid in the career? Yeah.
Are they taking him for granted a bit, Matt?
I think they are. Yeah, I think they are. I think they're underestimating him a little bit. I think that he, as a player, has earned, you know, the right to ask for more money for what he's getting. I mean, we all know footballers get paid ridiculous amounts of money these days anyway, but the way he's played and the numbers that he's gathered for Liverpool, why shouldn't he be asking for more money? Because his performances have earned him that, absolutely. So I don't understand why Liverpool are stalling on it currently. I don't know whether it's just playing the waiting game or what. I've seen it with a few clubs. A few clubs have tried that and then it's backfired on them majorly, and then they're sat there like, look, you know what I mean? Now he's in talks with this other club. Maybe we need to start the talks, but maybe it's too late at that point. So I think the sooner they sort it out at Liverpool, the better, because Mo Salah, even for the league in general, look, at the end of the day, Liverpool are City's rivals for the title, but I love watching him as a footballer. I love watching him in the Premier League. He brings eyes to the Premier League. And, you know, I mean, he's got the whole of Egypt, especially behind him as well. So he's an icon for them. So I think the sooner Liverpool get it sorted out, the better, because he does deserve the new contract and he does deserve more money for his performances and for his numbers.
I agree. Brilliant for African football in the Premier League as well. Obviously, Salah and Mane, in fact, are away with the African Cup of Nations tournament taking place at the moment. So those two players, and I think Naby Keita as well, on international duty. So there's been some controversy over Liverpool's games being postponed recently. We won't go into that now, but definitely think that Mo Salah is someone who does deserve a new contract, and Liverpool don't want to be stung.
Yeah, just on the Mo Salah thing, it's not entirely football, but he's in the new edition of GQ magazine that's come out, and I think yesterday.
His short shorts.
Very short, yeah, oh, very short
that.
Shorts. he's wearing the retro kit in the full John Aldridge style. In the interview, though, it points out that, you know, you're talking about how big a deal he is, and we all probably take him for granted. I don't realise.
He's even got a waxwork at Madame Tussauds.
Well, more than that, in Egypt, the life story of Mo Salah is taught in schools.
Of course, yeah.
His nickname is the Happiness Maker, and a couple of other things. You know, he's a very generous guy. He's paid to build a school. He's built a water treatment plant. He's built an ambulance station. I mean, all this in between training sessions, and. Beyond that as well, he's according to Stanford University researchers, they noticed that since Mo Salah's arrival in Liverpool in 2017, they've seen an 18.9% fall in hate crimes in the city. In Egypt, his involvement in a government anti-drugs campaign led to a fourfold increase in calls to a helpline. And in the presidential elections in Egypt in 2018, there was widespread reports of voters spoiling their papers and writing Salah's name, despite, of course, him not actually being on the ballot paper. He is a big deal in Egypt, it's fair to say.
I think sometimes we underestimate how important and powerful football can be, especially in Africa. I don't know if you guys saw the video of Riyad Mahrez getting off the Algeria coach.
Oh, yeah.
At the African Cup of Nations, and the boys and girls watching him get off the coach went absolutely ballistic when he got off and gave them a bit of a wave, which is just brilliant to see.
The more than footballers, you know, over there, it seems. It's like icons, gods even.
Absolutely.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's so much more.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with you. And, you know, Ian mentions about Mo Salah being taught in schools and building an ambulance station and being charitable and a bit of a philanthropist. But Didier Drogba did that as well, didn't he? Where he almost kind of built an entire village with better amenities for the people that, you know, he kind of grew up around. So brilliant to see that. And actually, I think it's brought more eyes on the African Cup of Nations actually in recent weeks, just because of the quality and talent that we've seen in the Premier League from African players. But at the moment, Mo Salah hasn't been offered a new deal by Liverpool. You have to think it would just be a matter of time, but we've been saying that for a number of weeks now. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break here on Football Social Daily. We do have some football to discuss. Premier League game last night between Southampton and Brentford, and there's one tonight as well as West Ham take on Norwich. We'll talk about both after this.
Football Social Daily. Subscribe to the podcast now so you never miss an episode.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Football's Social Daily. Find more great sport at sport-social.co.uk.
Welcome back. This is Football Social Daily from Sport Social. I'm Niall. I've got Matt and Ian alongside me, and there was a Premier League game last night. Just the one, as Everton against Leicester was postponed. It was between Southampton and Brentford at St Mary's, and it was the home side that came out victorious by a margin of 4-1. The Bees battered by Saints in the end. Southampton leapfrogged their opponents up to 11th with that victory. And their new owner, Dragan Scholak, was in attendance. That's Southampton, that is. Scholak's investment group has just taken over an 80% stake in the South Coast club. We hear often about this new manager bounce, Ian, but do you think this last night was a case of new owner bounce, perhaps?
Well, it could be, couldn't he? He was there with his Southampton scarf, looking like a native of the
looking
area.
Looking like a...
here comes the Portsmouth
spoken
fan.
Like a true Portsmouth fan. Yeah.
I don't know if he had a
staying true
did
to
he have
roots.
A half and near half
Pompey,
scarf
near
though,
the Pompey James
yeah half and half scarf Brentford Southampton, you know, the fixture of the year. He was there anyway, and what a great performance for him to take in from the director's box. Maybe there was a new owner bounce, knowing that the new man's in town and it's the transfer window and all that. I don't know, but certainly a good performance for him to see on his first trip there. Must certainly fill him with hope, and I don't know. Maybe it's the way that Brentford play, because Brentford, you know, are usually a fairly free flowing side, aren't they? Maybe. Just like happens with any side that plays that type of football, you know, you are liable to take a pasting every now and again, and maybe that was it. But you know, can't argue if you're a Southampton fan, you've got to be happy with that new owner and a 4-1 win.
That's the first time they've scored more than 3 goals in a Premier League game under Ralf Hasenhüttl, Matt. Does that surprise you, considering how often people mention the style of play that Southampton have, or is it not really a shock?
Well, when we talk about Ralf Hasenhüttl at Southampton, we think about the amount of goals that they've ended up conceding in games. They've conceded 9 twice, and I'm sure you'll know that, won't you, Niall? the players that they've got, they've got the likes of Armstrong, Che Adams up front. I mean, they're not sort of like prolific Premier League strikers. We know that Armstrong would come up from the Championship last season with, was it Blackburn he signed from? So they've got players there. They've got players like Ward-Prowse who are good from set pieces. I think what Southampton at the moment are happy with is consolidating for your usual mid-table, getting the odd good game in the season, like a 4-1 against Brentford. Look, Brentford aren't no one's mugs, so it's a great result for Southampton last night. They're not gonna score as many Premier League goals as, say, Man City or anything like that, Southampton, but they'll just be happy to pick up points as and when they can, Southampton. And yeah, the new owner last night being there probably did create a little bit of buzz with the players. Some of them probably trying to play the way for a better deal. Some of them maybe trying to play the way into the transfer window to leave. You don't know these things. We don't know what goes on behind the scenes at the clubs. Southampton, we'll just be happy with that result last night, and they'll be happy to finish mid-table or as high as they possibly can.
Yeah, it was a good win for them, no doubt about it. 4-1 victory, as I mentioned, the first time they've scored more than three goals under Ralf Hasenhüttl. In contrast, in the other dugout, Ian, Brentford boss Thomas Frank says that the Bees must learn from the defeat, and we often hear managers say that. But I think that's the right approach from him, in my opinion, not to overreact. It is Brentford's first season in the Premier League, after all, and they're doing pretty well, so it was inevitable that they were going to have a few baptisms of fire on their Premier League journey this season, but they've done pretty well on the whole.
Look, everybody's capable of getting beaten in the Premier League, and that's what makes it such a great thing, that you know, there is nobody really running away with it. Even the teams that are at the very, very top are capable of falling to a surprise every now and again. But that's to say, that's why it's fantastic. And I think Brentford have had certainly a better season than I thought they would have. Although, that said, you know what they've done in the Championship year after year. They've been, you know, a very solid team who, frankly, have only just missed out on promotion a few times. So you could argue they should have been in the Premier League a year or two earlier, maybe. It is a learning experience. You're not going to win them all, but they're in the right place. You know, mid-table, it's a decent place to be for a team that have just been promoted. There are plenty of teams that would swap with them. You are going to take a beating every now and again, unless you're in the top six, and even teams in the top six, it can happen. You are going to fall to these defeats. It's not something to panic about. I think if you're taking a defeat away from home, you can handle that. It's when you're getting spanked on your home turf week in, week out. That's when you've got to panic. But they've been scoring goals. They've been hard to break down. They're in a good place halfway through the season. So, yeah, don't panic just yet. It's just one of them things. You know what Southampton are like? We've said before, Southampton are one of them teams that are capable of beating somebody 4-1 and they'll probably get smashed 6-0 at the weekend. You know, it's how it goes.
I think it's an important thing we mentioned, though, about what Thomas Frank said after the game and how he dealt with it, Matt, because much like Ian says, you know, in the Premier League, you can get beaten by anyone at any time. And, you know, as a team like yours, Manchester City, will find out on occasion, sometimes getting beaten by the lesser teams can come as a bit of a shock. But for Brentford, if they had a manager that had thrown his toys out of the pram and started coming up with excuses and said, this is a disaster, we're in real trouble, I think that probably would have sent the wrong message to those supporters. I think that those involved with Brentford are just enjoying their journey at the moment.
Absolutely. Just enjoy the ride. You're in the Premier League for the first time in your history. Enjoy it. I mean, they're sitting 13th. They're on 23 points. They've won 6, drew 5 and lost 9. Which, you know, if they would have said at the start of the season in January, that's where you're going to be at, I think they would have snapped your hands off. They just need to keep picking up points at home and snatching the odd, you know, point here and there away, and they'll be fine. They've got some good players who can do bits of everything, and a manager who's, you know, like Thomas Frank, he's finding his feet in the Premier League. He needs these kind of games to just see where his players are at and see where he's at as a coach, and it's how they're going to bounce back from it that they're going to be judged. They've got a good thing going there at Brentford. The whole like sort of community. I mean, you see them singing "Hey Jude" and stuff like that, and they do like a lap of honour at the end of each game. There's a real closeness there. There's a real just like sort of like family feel with the whole club, and it's very rare you find that these days especially with Premier League clubs, because you see clubs sort of venturing further and further and further away than the fan base. Like the bigger they sort of get, the more money that they have. So I think they need to enjoy it. I think Brentford will stay up this season. They'll be absolutely fine, and they'll build on it from next season. They're bearing in mind they've got a lot of players that have come up with them from the Championship. They've not really invested too much and bought in a lot of players. Thomas Frank has trusted these players to do a job for him in the Premier League. He's seen them come up from the Championship. Like Ian said, they could have done it on a couple of occasions, but they've just missed out. They're up there now, and they're making the most of the opportunities. They're beating decent teams in the Premier League, home and away. They're not down there. They're not fighting for their lives. They're sitting comfortably. And if they, like said, Southampton leapfrogged them last night, they're a point above them in 11th. You know what I mean? If they finished 11th this season, Brentford, that'd be a fantastic achievement for them. Their first season in the Premier League. So I think, like you were just saying there, the fans just need to not press the panic button. The manager doesn't need to press the panic button. He needs just to sit back now, take this defeat on the chin, because it does happen. Go into the next game with a completely fresh perspective on things and just go again.
Yeah, well said. Totally agree with everything you've said there. And you mentioned, you know, having those moments in a Premier League season. Brentford fans, most of them would have never seen their team play in the top flight. And then that first day of the season, that Friday night, in August when they beat Arsenal 2-0 in their own stadium with fans back. I mean, that was a real special moment that I'll remember vividly, and I've no real affiliation to Brentford at all. So they're certainly doing well for themselves. Southampton 4, Brentford 1, the final score in the Premier League last night. There is a Premier League game tonight as well. West Ham United taking on Norwich City. It's a 7:45pm kickoff. Taking place at the same time, it's the second leg of the Carabao Cup semi-final between Tottenham and Chelsea. Chelsea currently lead in that tie 2-0 on aggregate, but let's focus on the Premier League game here, West Ham and Norwich at London Stadium. The Hammers have won their last three in all competitions, including an FA Cup win over your side Leeds at the weekend, in controversial fashion, we must add, Ian, but over Christmas they hit a bit of a bump. They remain fifth in the table, but if they beat Norwich, they're back in the top four, and so therefore pressure returns to Arsenal and Spurs, who will be chasing them in that race for Champions League football next season.
Yes, from a Leeds United point of view, what a few days. being beaten by West Ham and then probably cheering West Ham on later on this evening. But, you know, West Ham are a tricky team. They are starting to get good, aren't they? You know, sort of consistently. They've got a good spine of the team. David Moyes does actually seem to know what he's doing eventually when they give him enough time. But, you know, a very tough trip for Norwich. If you're down there at the bottom, you do not want to be visiting West Ham. I think they've got too much for Norwich, I'm pretty sure. We can always be proved wrong. There's always a surprise. I fancy that this should be a good one for West Ham. And they've got to see it as an opportunity, haven't they? Playing a team like Norwich, who are down the bottom. West Ham looking, as you say, to sort of get back into that top four, those European positions, and certainly consolidate at least the top six. This has got to be the opportunity.
Well, there's that old cliche, isn't there? There's no easy games in the Premier League, but if they want to finish in the Champions League, they need to beat Norwich.
Yeah, exactly. You've got to beat the teams below you, wherever you are in the league. You've got to beat the teams below you, and you know it doesn't get much of a bigger opportunity than for Norwich City.
Well, there are no teams below Norwich at the moment. They are rock bottom of the Premier League.
Well, they can look forward to beating QPR.
Well, there are some arguments that those Norwich supporters, Matt, have thrown the towel in. We know football fans like to have a bit of gallows humour in this country. I mean, as a Pompey fan, I know all about
I've
that.
I've been there We've as well, sang. Niall.
Yeah, of course you have. Of course you have. You've been singing in the stands, "Let's Pretend We Score a Goal," and all these other chants that everyone loves to sing when your team isn't doing that well and you're falling upon hardship. We're hearing a lot of that from the Norwich fans at the moment. They seem to have kind of resign themselves to the fact they'll be in the Championship next season. But Dean Smith obviously won't have. He'll be determined to get his side out of it. Amazingly, they're still only 4 points from safety, so even though it hasn't been great for them recently, it can still be done.
Yeah, all it takes is a couple of results to go your way and for you to get a couple of wins, and then, you know, things are looking a little bit more rosier. But you think Norwich fans by now would be used to it, because when I think of yo-yo Premier League teams, they are the first team that comes to my mind, because they are up and down consistently.
They've overtaken West Brom, haven't they?
Yeah, they have. They've overtaken West Brom in that regard. And, you know, when you look at them in the Premier League this season, they're not scoring enough goals. I don't mind Teemu Pukki. He's okay as a Premier League striker. He's a Championship striker at best for me. He's only going to be... He's like Mitrovic. You know what I mean? Alexander Mitrovic for Fulham. He's, in that regard, he can go down to the Championship and he can get you 20-plus goals a season. But in the Premier League, he isn't going to do that. And I just don't think they've got the squad for it. Dean Smith has come, he's been sacked by Villa, he's come into a club there that, you know, are fighting for their lives. He's not going to turn it around. He's definitely not going to turn it around. He'll go down with Norwich and he'll do well in the Championship next season, more than likely. They've got this transfer window. Are they going to sign any players this transfer window that are going to change it around? Probably not. And there's, you know, there's, like you said, there was talk of discontent with the fan base. They're talking to Billy Gilmour to back to Chelsea and stuff like that, you know. Billy Gilmour is a decent player. I've seen enough of Billy Gilmour to know that he's a decent player. He's a good midfielder, and he's just having a hard time at the moment because he's in a team where it's just not working out. Brandon Williams is another good young player, and he's there and he's getting experience in what it's like to be fighting, you know, for a relegation battle. It'll be good character building for these kind of players, for these good young players, and they'll probably go back to the parent clubs next season after the Norwich get relegated, and they'll take that with them in their careers. It's just one of them for Norwich. They're just going to have to just take each game as it comes. It's a mega tough game for them going to the London Stadium tonight. Like you said, West Ham got ambitions of finishing their top four. West Ham are going to come out every single week now like a cup final. They want to better their top six finish of last season. And for me, they deserve it. Because when you look at David Moyes, and you look, when he first went there, I mean, Jim will tell you this himself, when David Moyes first went there, everyone was questioning it. Like, is he the type of manager that West Ham need? You know, his football is very pragmatic. It's not very offensive. It's more set-piece based. Now look at West Ham. They're reaping the rewards of giving a manager time. You know, this is something that Man United didn't do when they brought him in. They gave him a six-year contract and he lasted, what, 7 months? Because it wasn't the Man United way. West Ham have always been known for, like, sort of free-flowing attacking football. When you think of, like, West Ham from back in the day when they say it's the West Ham way, is this the West Ham way that you'd think of right now? No, it's not. But it's getting West Ham United results and decent results. And they've got a great spine there. They've got a player like Declan Rice. They've got Mikhail Antonio. They've got Lanzini. They've got Suchek. All these players that are absolutely at, you know, their peak performance under David Moyes at the moment. When they are at their top form, they are on top form. David Moyes seems to be getting the best out of every single one of those players that are on the pitch for him when they start. And that's an absolutely fantastic thing for West Ham. West Ham and Man City are known to have a little bit of affiliation with each other. I love seeing West Ham doing well because it makes things more interesting in the Premier League. They're called the Big Six. You know what I mean? They're breaking into the Big Six. People were thinking that the Big Six couldn't, you know, Leicester have been there and thereabouts, haven't they? Leicester have been fighting for Champions League football for a couple of seasons now, and now West Ham are up there. So it just goes to show you, if you give a manager time, if you give them the right resources, then they can do things for you. They can work these like moments of magic. And this is what West Ham need to make the most of right now, because like they've been good in Europe this season as well. You know, it wasn't so much so for Leicester, but West Ham have took advantage of getting that European experience. And hopefully, for me, fingers crossed, they break into the top four and they can take that with them into the Champions League next season.
Yeah, certainly it'd be interesting to see West Ham in the mix for the Champions League. There's no doubt about that. And Norwich City, they've got some serious work to do if they're going to stay up and even get a result at the London Stadium tonight. 7:45 p.m. kickoff. The Canaries haven't scored a Premier League goal since November, and that screams to me forward players required in the window, but I don't know whether they'll bother. And actually, some interesting developments just while we were talking about the fans and Dean Smith. Allegedly, Dean Smith isn't very happy with the Norwich supporters for expressing their humour in that way over the performances of the team. But the one thing you don't want to do as a manager is question the fans, even if maybe what they're doing isn't helpful. It's never a good route to go down. I'm not a manager, but certainly I've seen enough football over the years to know that that is not something you want to start doing. Talking of managers, two brilliant managers clashed tonight. In the Carabao Cup semi-final second leg, Antonio Conte and Thomas Tuchel do battle Chelsea against Spurs. It is the Blues who hold a 2-0 advantage over Tottenham Hotspur. They have 1 foot at Wembley for the Carabao Cup final. Ian, it's going to be a big ask for Tottenham to try and score 3 past Chelsea in regular time and get the job done. Do you think they can do it?
who knows? The way things have been going for them at the moment, I wouldn't fancy it. Very, very difficult. Maybe against another team, but Chelsea just being such a strong defensive unit. You know, we know that the sort of best defence in Europe, I think, certainly so far this season. I think it's going to be a tough ask for them. I think against another team, you know, if they're playing against, you know, Southampton or Norwich or any of those.
Southampton again.
Yeah, Southampton. You know, backing Southampton to sort of let 4 in the night after, then then possibly. But I think Chelsea, you know, they're just too good a unit. Of course, it depends what side Tuchel puts out, because they've got a lot on their plate, haven't they, Chelsea? And it depends whether that you know they put out the strongest possible defence that they have available. But if they do, if it's a full first choice team, then could be a tricky ask. Be interesting to see though, it's gonna be an exciting game to watch for that reason. A lot of pressure on it.
Yeah, London derby as well, semi-final second leg, definitely going to be an interesting one to watch at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. And Spurs, they were 1-0 down to Morecambe of League One in the FA Cup at the weekend, and they managed to rally, not late on, but I suppose with the final half an hour of the game, to come back and win the match 3-1. So it's definitely something that they can do. They can come from behind, but coming from a deficit against Morecambe is a totally different kettle of fish than coming from behind against Chelsea, Matt.
Yeah. Speaking of Morecambe, they put out a tweet over the weekend that actually made me laugh. They've scored more goals at the stadium than City have. City have never scored. City have never scored a stadium ever. It's like a cursed ground for us. So that, yeah, that made me laugh. Two completely different kettles of fish, in it. Like you said, Ian was saying there, Chelsea are well known for their defensive unit. Tottenham just going to have to go for it tonight. It feels weird not watching a Carabao Cup semi-final with City in it, I must say. And it hurts that we aren't going to be at Wembley this season fighting for our fourth one in a row. But, you know, you can't win them all, can you, unfortunately? It's just one of them things. I expect a good game tonight. I expect Tottenham to come out swinging. They've got no other choice. They've got to go out there and they've got to try and put a statement down. Look, that was the last trophy that Spurs won in 2008, the League Cup. And the fans are starved of silverware. We all know Spurs are Spursy. And this is the way they've had a Champions League final. Let's be real, that was a massive achievement for them. But with a manager like Antonio Conte, with the stadium that they've got and, you know, the fan base that they've got, they need trophies. And I think the League Cup's very, very underrated. Everyone goes on about the FA Cup, the Premier League, the Champions League. If you win that League Cup in February, that can be the stepping stone to bigger and better things.
Great boost.
It's absolutely. We've seen it with Mourinho in the past for Chelsea. He loved that trophy for Chelsea. He used to go in February, win that, then win the Premier League and win the FA Cup and whatnot. So it's just one of these trophies that needs to be, you know, respected and regarded in a high manner. It's a major trophy. It goes on your CV as a manager as well. Conte will want it. But they've maybe left themselves a little bit too much to do, losing 2-0 at Stamford Bridge in the first leg. I hope to see a good game tonight. I will watch it, and, you know, as a neutral, I'm not bothered who wins usually, but I'll be probably rooting for Spurs tonight, definitely.
I think a goal in the first 20 minutes or something like that for Spurs would certainly spice it up.
Absolutely.
Wouldn't it? You know, that's
yeah,
the thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I think if it bubbles on, or Chelsea score a couple for early doors, then, you know,
game over.
You can write it off, can't you? But, you know,
that's what happened in the first leg. Spurs just were shambolic in the first 20 minutes. I mean, they scored an own goal. The first goal came after, I think, 3 or 4 minutes from Havertz, and they just shot themselves in the foot and gave themselves a mountain to climb for the next 80 minutes of the game. And, you know, you're talking about a club, as Matt says, that haven't won a trophy since 2008. You know, Wigan Athletic and Pompey and several other teams have won trophies more recently than Spurs have. So
Birmingham.
It's Birmingham City, yeah, it's such a shame for Tottenham to have found themselves in another semi-final and yet again give themselves such hard work to do.
Yeah, no, it is just the way Spurs sort of tend to operate one way or another. It seems to be a constant every season. There's always a, you know, make it hard for themselves.
It's funny with Tottenham.
Just looking here on...
Sorry, traditionally they were a cup team. When you look at them down the years, they've always been known as a good cup side. But that sort of like reputation is slowly drifting away because, like I said, they've not won anything since 2008. I remember it was when Jonathan Woodgate and all them was playing for them. And I think they actually beat Chelsea in that final. In February that year, in 2008. So they need to just think about that now. Think about getting to Wembley and don't let them score in the first 20 minutes. Because like I said, if they do that, it's game over. Tottenham need to still be in the game. They need to still be in the game. If they get an early goal, then fantastic. But even in the second half, if it's 2-0, still, they've got a chance. So Spurs just need to not concede tonight. If they don't concede at all, then they've got a chance.
Well, that game kicks off the same time as West Ham against Norwich. It's Spurs against Chelsea in the second leg of the Carabao Cup semi-finals. Who will find their way to Wembley? Liverpool and Arsenal will be one of the two clubs joining either Spurs or Chelsea there. That game takes place tomorrow. There's been plenty of controversy around it. We'll talk about it on tomorrow's show. But Matt, Ian, that's it for today. Thanks for your company as ever. Been great to have you on the show once again. And don't forget, if you hit subscribe, that way you won't miss an episode of this podcast again. We are the only daily Premier League podcast out there. But that's it from us here on Football Social Daily, and we'll speak to you again next time.
Football Social Daily. Subscribe to the podcast now so you never miss an episode.